Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour, August 26, 2021. And a lot of topics to cover tonight. I'm going to be continuing my discussion of space travel. And you're listening to things on this show that you will never, ever hear anyplace else. You might, if you were a fly on the wall in some high-level military meetings dealing with space innovation, etc., you would hear similar things, but not in the general public. There's certainly nobody talking about this in any place, any venue that you're going to find that's available to the public. First of all, I want to just let people know that I have extended the sale. There were people that called in. They missed the coupon code. They didn't understand how to use it. And there was a, on my webpage, this is for the JMCC water filters, especially the MR5, but all the products on that page. And there are some things, the small items are not discounted because there's, you know, with the free shipping, we would lose money by sending you the product. So the small things, like the four pack of filter elements, are not 10% discounted, or the spigots or things like that. But the bigger things have a 10% discount on the price on the sales page. Plus, you can get an additional 10% off by using the coupon code JMCC. And that's extended out another week. And so anyway, and the reason, as I say, people wrote in, they didn't quite know how to use the coupon code. When you're at your shopping cart and you're just ready to click the checkout button, you're on the shopping cart page, there's a little box on the left-hand side. It says coupon code. And so you would type in JMCC for an additional 10% off. And that's going to go away. We are too busy and don't need to put sale pricing on, but this is for my audience, a little special bonus for listening. And that's going to be good probably until Sunday night. Then the 10% sale pricing is going to come off and the coupon code JMCC will go away. So let's just put that out for this Sunday night. So that would be the, let me see, it'd be the 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th. So midnight on the 29th of August, Sunday night, this sale will go away. Both the 10% sale that's on the page and the additional 10% coupon code will go away Sunday night. And it's just also I've been really busy. I had not had time to go in and remove that 10% sale. But this Sunday I will do that. And so that gives you a few more days. And I encourage people to look at the MR5 whole house water filter. And here's the actual reality. If you look over a 10-year period of purchasing, say, gravity filter elements and things like that, and I sell those. I have the best ones on the market. The new HI filters are amazing. They're unlike anything that's ever been produced in the water filter market before. They have a 100 times smaller pore size than anything you can find anyplace else. And then also the number of things that are taken out by the medium, the chemicals, etc., it just better than before. And people ask me about the ceramic filters, and there's not a big change physically in what the filters remove, the new HI over the GF filters, the ceramic filters. And what I've told people is that, and I say this on the webpage, that the reason I went to the HI filters is, number one, I can make lots of them, something I could never do before with ceramics. And number two is they don't break in shipment, and they don't break when you're trying to put them in, etc. And so if people still want the ceramics, yes, they're available. There's a box there you can click on. But what I'm really encouraging people to look at is, here's the deal. If you calculate what you're going to spend over a 10-year period for gravity filters, which only filter cold water in your kitchen, you can get a whole house water filter for the same amount of money that you're going to spend for the gravity water filters, or even a sink filter or something like that, which only filters the cold water. The whole house water filter filters the water before it goes and splits to your hot water heater and the cold water line to your house. So you're filtering everything in your house, hot and cold water, are filtered. And that's because the whole house water filter is placed at the point of entry where the water comes into your house before it goes to your hot water heater. So by the time it gets to your hot water heater, it's already been filtered. And this is not a water softener. I want to emphasize that because there's a lot of companies out there that are selling a glorified water softener and calling it a whole house water filter. It is not. And the way you tell if it's a water softener, if it has a container with a small cap and a resin that you put in there, the resin may be looking, it might be inside of a tube looking thing, but it's a resin, and that's a water softener. They're very limited on what they can take out of the water, and they're very costly, and you have to renew this resin, etc. But they're selling them for really a high price. I mean, much more than my whole house water filter. My MR5 is less expensive, and the MR5 is a broad spectrum water filtration system. Commercial grade. The container is stainless steel. It's amazing, amazing construction. Beautiful piece. You could put this in the middle of your dining room table. That's how attractive this piece of machinery is. And so anyway, then you also have the ability to buy the replacement filter elements. There are five HI filter elements. They're 20 inches long, 3 inches in diameter. Little less than 3 inches in diameter, but these, there are five of these, and once again, this is brand new technology, never seen before. The pore size is very small, and the number of things removed by this filter just unmatched by any other technology. And so, and the a couple questions people ask, frequently asked questions: how often do you change the filters? Every 50,000 gallons. So you measure it on your water meter. If you're paying a water bill, it has the amount of water that you've used. So you can clock your 50,000 gallons, and that's when you change out the filter pack. And then also, how easy is this to install? I encourage people to get a professional plumber because they know all the code issues in your area, the pressure in the water line, all kinds of things that a professional plumber is going to know about that you probably are not going to know about. So it's a 2 or 3 or maybe at most 4 hour job for a professional plumber to put this thing in. And the feedback that I get from plumbers is that they've never seen anything like it, and it's amazing quality. Those are the two comments I constantly get when people have a plumber come over and put it in. And so those are compliments. That's from people that are in the field every day putting in all kinds of equipment, and they're saying, wow, this is superior quality equipment, which it is. I'm very proud of this. There's nothing like this anywhere. And so right now, they're typically $1,766 with the sale 10% discount. They're $1,599, and then you get another 10% discount with the coupon code JMCC. When you're at checkout, that brings it down to like the low 1400s for the whole house water filter. And there's an optional UV filter, final bacteria virus filter that kills anything that gets past the MR5 filter. And if you do have a water softener, if you have a hard water issue and you have a water softener, leave that where it is. The order of flow is the water comes in the house, goes through the water softener, if you have one, then it goes to the MR5, then it goes to the UV filter, and it comes with instructions. You just give that to your plumber, the couple hours they put it in, and you set. All the water in your house is filtered. And I don't like to use fear or anything like that to sell a product, but the information I'm getting from inside sources is that the insane people running the world are going to try and put something in water supplies. So I feel you should be protected. This is a very inexpensive way, plus all of the other pollution and chemicals. If you go to my webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com, you can get a free pamphlet there. It's called What's in Your Water. It's 10 pages long. It's about a 20-minute read. But I'll tell you, it's an eye-opener for people who are not aware of what's going on in water. So anyway, once again, I'll jump into the science topics here, but this is really important. You're not going to find anything like this anyplace else. The webpage jmccwaterfilters, that's plural with an S, .com. And once again, the coupon code is JMCC, four letters, J-M as in Mary, C-C. Very simple to remember. And when you're checking out, you get that extra 10% on anything, any purchases you make on the webpage until Sunday night. Okay, enough of that. On to a few topics here. Very interesting. In December, a comet called C2021A1 Leonard, that's the name of the comet, is going to pass near the planet Venus. And Venus will pass through its tail. They'll come about 2 million miles apart, which is significant. That's about, let's see, the distance to the moon is about 250,000 miles. So that would be about 8 lunar distances, which is not that far away. And so Venus will pass through the tail of this comet, which could cause some lightning interaction, some interplanetary discharge activity between Venus and this comet, because Venus is discharging the solar capacitor, the comet is discharging the solar capacitor. So there could be some sparks here. And it's in a position where it's going to be visible to amateur astronomers. And so potentially you could see something and get some good photos, etc., because of this comet passing by the planet Venus. Once again, the comet name, C2021A1 Leonard. And I'll be watching this, of course, come December. It's the actual passage date is December 18th and 19th. And of course, that can change if the comet has some tail drag or other activity. But this is a relatively small comet. And apparently has an 80,000 year orbit, and so that's, it's been in the solar system before, and also it could have a little bit of a perturbation in its orbit due to the proximity to Venus. So a lot of interesting things going on with this particular comet. Here's a rather, I think, comical story, a little bit of good humor here. Bill Nelson is the head of NASA, and this week, going on this week, is the Space Symposium, which is a bunch of people getting together talking about space and the interest in space and things like that. I think it'd be kind of fun to go to, but I don't particularly think that a lot happens here. I think it's a lot of gee whiz talk, because there's only a few people that are actually doing anything in outer space, the least of which would be NASA. But anyway, they have a program. It's called the Artemis program. Artemis was the sister of Apollo. And so Apollo was the Greek god, of course, and Artemis was the lunar partner that would move across the sky. And so it's called Artemis, this NASA program. And they originally said they're going to go to the moon by 2024. Well, that's a pipe dream. That's, pig with lipstick. There's just no way. They don't have spacesuits. In fact, what they're claiming is, doggone it, we're just not going to have our spacesuits ready till 2024, later in the year, November. So therefore, they can't go to the moon by 2024. Well, what's wrong with the old Apollo spacesuits? Those seemed to work fine, didn't they? What do we need a new spiffy spacesuit for to go walking around the moon? We all seen the videos, Apollo astronauts walking around on the moon, right? Well, there shouldn't be a big issue then reconstructing the Apollo astronaut spacesuits, and just what's wrong with them? But they need this new spiffy spacesuit, and it's only on the drawing boards. By the way, this whole program is nothing but artist conceptions. They gave away like $25 million bucks a piece to Bezos and to Musk and to some other companies to try and build some kind of a lander to land on the moon, because NASA doesn't have the wherewithal to do this. So anyway, the bottom line is Bill got up and he said, doggone, we're the right stuff. We're the go-to people. We're the get-it-done people. He was quoting Kennedy that we do this because not because it's easy, because it's hard, you know. So it's all the same posturing. But the bottom line is they don't have the ability to go to the moon. They don't have a heavy lift rocket. You know, it's just like, you know, it's like somebody saying, we're going to build a car, but we don't have any tires. We don't have any car. We don't have the chassis. We don't have the motor. And we don't even have the steering wheel. Nor do we have the suit for the driver to put on to go in our car. And they're going to go, but we're going to be going in our car soon. It's just la-la land is the best thing you can say. But they get money. And all the presidents, that's the thing. NASA is Congress-proof. It's president-proof. Everybody always gives money to NASA because what they did was distribute their manufacturing and parts procurement all over the country. Every congressional district has at least one small company making something for NASA. And so at any rate, no congressman, no president would vote or hinder what was going on with NASA. Interestingly enough, when the big government shutdown came, when Trump first became president, it was like January, February that year, there was a government shutdown because they had not approved the budget. And so all of the big agencies, the EPA and HUD and all the big agencies, got chopped at the knees. They got their funding chopped, and they were basically shut down. And NASA got 100% of its budget. The closest one to that might have been 50% of their budget, but NASA got 100% of their budget. Why? Because of this policy where they sprinkled NASA contracts all over the country, and nobody will touch it with a 10-foot pole. Nobody will say that the king has no clothes. None of this stuff is going to work. And anyway, so NASA is officially not going to the moon in 2024, and they don't really have a follow-on date, which I think is also rather mildly humorous, unless you're paying the public, you're the general public paying the ticket on all of this. Okay, next topic, Jupiter wins. And I was on John Moore's show yesterday, and a woman called in, and she said, she was asking about, then of course, the storms that have been ripping through the United States and worldwide. I've always talked about the Jupiter winds, and that happens. Now, we had an inferior conjunction with Jupiter on August 21st, so that was, 5 days ago. And if you noticed, if you watched the weather news at all, you would have found that there was tremendous, unprecedented storm activity around the United States and around the world. And so the Jupiter winds are a direct result of Earth coupling electrically with Jupiter. And it can be the inferior conjunction day, which was August 21st, that would be the peak, and then plus or minus 3 to 7 days, because it's not the visual alignment necessarily, it's the Sun-Earth-Jupiter alignment, but it's an electrical alignment, and that depends on these are like snakes out in outer space that are swinging back and forth. So it's not clear, because nobody knows that these are there, because our illustrious space agency has no clue about this, so they're not trying to measure it. They have no equipment out there to monitor this. So it can vary from as much as a few days before and after to as much as 7 days before and after. And then also we have the August return current sheet that we're in right now. And I talked about this, I believe, last week, where the return current sheet is the return because the sun has an excess current of protons in the solar wind, that cannot keep going on forever. And so there's a return current sheet that comes back to the sun, and that comes back to the sun where Earth passes in the month of August. So you add these factors up relative to whether the Jupiter inferior conjunction, August 21st, and the August return current sheet, and that can be the formula for some fairly severe weather, which we have seen. We have the hurricanes in the Atlantic, they're going all the way up the East Coast, certainly not caused by warm water up on the North Atlantic. So the Jupiter winds front and center right now. So let me explain a little bit how this works. And of course, you can read about this. My books, the starts out with the Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book, the Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection book, and primarily the weather book, which the official title, Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather, goes into details, and I talk about this in there with electrical alignments. I talk about the return current sheet of August and Jupiter alignments, etc., major planetary alignment. But Jupiter is somewhat in the, let's call it, the, for lack of a better term, kind of the middle of the solar system. Its orbit is quite a bit farther from the sun than Earth, but it's a major, it has a major electrical discharge of the solar capacitor. It also has its own fusion-based atmospheric generator, which causes local effects with its own moon system and its own magnetic sheath. But Jupiter, extension of its electrical size is enormous. It spans half of the solar system. So when Jupiter and Saturn align, there are some fireworks also. You can see advanced activity on both those planets. And that happens much more rarely than the Earth alignment. So what happens with Earth is as we come around in our orbit, Jupiter takes about 10 years to go around the sun. So what happens? As Earth goes around the sun in 1 year, Jupiter has moved a bit, about one-tenth of its orbit, so it takes Earth a little bit of time to catch up. So it's about a 13-month, a little bit more delay between consecutive Jupiter wind alignments, the electrical alignment with Jupiter. So it's about every 13 months. And so it happens to be, like right now, it'd be August 21st, so count about 13 months. Next year, it will be like September 21st. But it'll be a bit later because of the fact that Jupiter is moving on a 10-year orbit. But anyway, so it advances every year, like maybe just say a month, just to be approximate. And then the width of the electrical current sheet is, so next year, for example, when it happens in September or afterwards, it will not couple with the August return current sheet. So this year is rather special in that the Jupiter inferior conjunction also happens in the month of August. That won't happen for, you know, another 10 years or so. And I don't have the exact number of years. I'm just giving round numbers. Okay, so what happens is Earth is also discharging the solar capacitor. Earth's electrical size is probably 20 million miles. And so when the Earth's discharge and the Jupiter discharge line up, this causes a discharge that spans pretty much almost the whole solar system, all the way out to the far reaches of the solar system, probably out to where the Jupiter alignment and electric tail probably extends out to around Saturn at least, where it's fairly effective. Okay, so now you have these coupling together, so that extends the current sheet, and so you're going to see some more. If you had a weather monitoring system on Jupiter, you would see a lot of increased activity, but especially on Earth, because Jupiter is a big contributor to the overall electrical discharge of the solar system. So when these two align, Earth and Jupiter, now there have been times when we've had other members of the solar system aligning at the same time. But right now, none of the other planets in the inner solar system are near an electrical alignment with Earth, and of course Jupiter and Earth are aligned, but none of the other planets are. And that includes the outer major planets also. Saturn, Uranus, Neptune are not aligned at all. So this is just the Earth and Jupiter. Interestingly enough, we also had a full moon mixed in here. Now, the full moon is not as active as the new moon. So we had a full moon just a few days ago, and that would have been in the same mix of dates. But it is significant because the moon also, when it travels outside the Earth's the moon, when it's traveling laterally to the Earth, in other words, perpendicular to the line of the Sun-Earth direction, or out in front of Earth, it's completely out of our magnetosphere. And so it's an independent body in space. So what happens during the new moon and the new moon passing, I talk about this in my books, that the moon, during new moon, it's right between Earth and the Sun. It's blocking the solar wind, and when it moves out a few days later, that's what I call new moon passing, that's when the connection of the solar wind and the solar electrical discharge, the electron discharge from the Sun to Earth, it snaps away from the moon and comes crashing into Earth's geomagnetic field. It's out about 35,000 miles from Earth. And that can trigger storm activity. But now we have a full moon, which means the Earth is blocking the discharge to the moon. But also in a few days after new moon, which is after the full moon, which is right about now, then there can be some activity also when the moon picks up the solar wind, etc. Again, when it moves out of Earth's magnetic tail, as they call it, misnomer, it's actually Earth's comet tail. But it's not as strong as the new moon passing by a factor of probably 100, just an estimate. Okay, so anyway, this is all very interesting. And of course, we did have the reaction, the weather systems, the hurricanes in the Atlantic, the weather systems, the tremendous weather storm systems, thunderstorms, etc., happening all across the country, you know, Tennessee, major flooding, etc. And the other thing is, if you look at the Tennessee flooding, you have to ask yourself, where did all that water come from? Much of that water came from outer space. The Tennessee, of course, has access to the Gulf of Mexico in terms of water, but typically that much water does not come from just normal weather activity coming off the Gulf of Mexico. This is water that was, you could have multiple sources, but the bulk of that water, when you had like dozens and dozens of inches of rain in a very short period of time, that water, a lot of that water is coming from outer space. And can you imagine our illustrious weather service, NOAA, and the weather stations, etc., have no clue. They're not smart enough to ask the question, where did all this water come from? Is you can see the maps, you can see the weather maps, you can see the water concentration in the atmosphere leading up to these storms, and all of a sudden there's this just unbelievable rush of water coming down. Where does it come from? It's not coming from just the atmospheric water content. It's coming from above, which means outer space. And, of course, the Jupiter winds, what happens is Earth is already acting as a comet. So the connection of water coming in, just like a comet tail, Earth occupies the region of the solar system that is has a lot of hydrogen and oxygen. When those come together in the electric field that's bringing it down to Earth, the discharge of the solar capacitor creates a negative shield around Earth, a negatively charged shield, and that's what these hydrogen and oxygen ions are moving towards. And when they combine in the electric field, they get pinched, which is an expression for the current sheets pulling together. Then they form water. That's where the water's coming from. So interestingly enough, and nobody has a clue. As I said, You have to listen to this show to get even a glimpse of reality, because everybody out there, the National Weather Service, the weather channels, the howdy doody puppets that repeat the weather news, read it. They're weather readers. They're not weathermen. They're weather readers. They go to school long enough to learn how to read a teleprompter and make it look like they're talking to you. But that's, you'll never hear this on any other source relative to weather or what's going on. Okay, I think we've covered the main topics here, the initial topics. So getting back to last week, electric highways to the stars. Now, I ran out of time last week, and this is a topic that's going to take a number of weeks of discussion. Here's the situation. Nature, or should we say the Creator, has ordained us with methods of traveling around space easily. And if, we use petroleum now to move big ships on the ocean, we use nuclear power to move big ships on the ocean, but we could have done all of this with sail. It's very convenient to have a motor. You have a lot of control over your mobility. You have a lot of control over moving as fast as you want in whatever direction you want. But it all could have been done with sail. In other words, naturally occurring energy systems that you could use to, say, cross the ocean and deliver products and people. That's the reality. So the electric highways to the stars are similar in that, let's also examine sail. You're totally dependent on the local rivers of wind, if you want to call them that, rivers of wind that blow across the oceans. And so if you're going into the wind, you can only go upstream so far, and then you have to tack and turn back, and it could be a long ride across the ocean using strictly wind. But of course, back in the old square rig days, back in the Middle Ages when they were crossing the Atlantic Ocean for trade or going around the tip of South America or going into the Pacific, they were primarily using square rigs, which is a go-with-the-wind only. So they developed a technique and an understanding of the weather patterns so that they would sail south along the coast of Africa until they got to a certain point, and then they would sail west. And that would bring them to the New World. Then when they leave the New World, they would sail north until they picked up the trade winds, bringing them back to Europe. And so the wind currents, they learned to use these to their advantage because they only had square rig sails and they could not sail close haul to the wind as modern sailing ships. But it worked. And so you could use those same techniques today to go west to deliver oil and use wind power. It takes about, I think the estimates, about 10 to 15% of the oil that's in an oil tanker is used just to transport the oil. And so one of the big expenses in oil is bringing it from the Mideast in these giant ships. And that's, of course, part of the conundrum of the whole energy industry is transportation. You find that with coal, you find that with oil, you find that with uranium. Every source of energy that is using high energy content fuels, they have the same issue, and that is delivery. One of the big expenses is in the shipping of the fuel itself. Which brings up a very interesting concept. What if we could operate a parallel economy, that was built on sanity, not greed, not choices of international corporations whose only interest is charging as much as possible. Their only interest is making things as difficult as possible to make them as expensive as possible, and we're all trapped in this system somehow. What if you could develop an entirely parallel system where energy, water, food, transportation, communication, housing, all of the essential things that you need on an everyday basis are literally very inexpensive because you're using very economical means to do them. Building houses with locally available earth construction techniques, in other words, using in fact, this is done in many parts of the world where you take whatever is available. And clay, for example, is available in most places, making clay bricks instead of cement bricks, although cement is rather reasonable also. It's an earth product. And then, for example, there are techniques now for using foam agents within cement. It makes it much more insulating. It makes it much lighter. It makes it easier to work with. You can pick these blocks up and very easily glue them together and make a structure very easily. In other words, the reason blocks for building are small is because they weigh so much, whether they're clay blocks or cement blocks or whatever you're making your blocks from. But if you can introduce an agent in them where you can make them very lightweight, the density is very low, then you could you can make the blocks very much bigger. And so your construction time, instead of putting lots of little blocks together, you're putting a few big blocks together, and you could build a house in a matter of maybe a couple days. You know, crew comes out, the blocks come there. They're form-fitted, so they fit together, so you're just putting a little bit of glue. They're very highly insulating. They're impervious to moisture, so you have all of the things that you typically have from, a timber-framed house with a wrap around it to keep the moisture, the vapor seals, etc., but all in this block. And, of course, these products already exist. I'm not inventing something new. But I'm just saying that what if we went to economies of scale where you could have a house, a really good house, a highly insulated house that would not need a lot of heating and air conditioning, would use very minimal. So you're using a lot less energy. You're using water that's filtered from very clean sources. You're not using chemicals in your water, polluting the water systems, etc. And so basically you could live in a society that is much cleaner, is much less expensive. Say, now let's just take a house, for example. And why am I talking about this during a show where we're talking about space travel? Because it's the same thing. It's the same concept. Why are you spending trillions of dollars, literally hundreds of billions of dollars, with a space agency trying to go into space that continually fails? NASA is the classic example of the Einsteinian snip, that if you keep doing, insanity is doing what you've always been doing and expecting a different result. That was one of the famous Albert Einstein quips. And of course, here we are, the 1960s, good grief, we're now, 60 years plus away from there. And they're still talking about building chemical rockets and this thing, like a little bubble-shaped thing that the people would land on the moon. Absolutely absurd. And what for? They're not going to be able to maintain a lunar base. I've always said that by the time NASA gets to the moon again and lands their Apollo-looking spacecraft on the moon and the astronauts step out, they'll be able to take a Chinese Uber down the street and buy a Chinese takeout. Because, it's so amazing to see these people. How can Bill Nelson sleep with himself at night with a clear conscience when he's running a program that has no possibility of success, and all he can come up with is buzz terms that were used in the 1960s and try and build a space program around things that don't even exist? rockets and space landing and vehicles and new space suits, none of which even exist, that are taking years, now decades, to develop. I mean, it's just, these people are in la-la land. Okay, so in getting back to outer space, what if you could build space vehicles that were very, very inexpensive and didn't require large chemical rockets to move them around? This is all here. I've talked about this. Remember then my video, you can see it. You'll see me as a bit younger person. I think it was the 2004 UFO Congress, Electric Highways to the Stars. I gave a talk on this entire topic. So that's pushing, 17 years ago when I gave a talk in Laughlin, Nevada on this topic, which to me at the time was an old topic. That was a topic that I had been promoting 20 years earlier when I was in California promoting my space program, etc. And it was noticed, but it was absconded with by the military. And clearly they knew what was going on. But just imagine that 40 years later, 40 years later, NASA is still trying to build a moon rocket. Oh, my goodness. If you buy that, then, you know, I got a really nice bridge in New York to sell you. It's called the Brooklyn Bridge. And you know what the story is, if you don't know the story behind that little, the selling somebody the Brooklyn Bridge. When the immigrants would come off the boat in New York, they'd finally get off Ellis Island, which was a quarantine, to make sure they didn't have, you know, disease or whatever. And then they would be admitted into New York. The first thing that would happen is some guy would come up to him and say, "Hey, you see that bridge up there? You're in America now. Here's the best opportunity. I'll sell you that bridge for, you know, how much money do you have in your pocket?" And the guy'd say, "Well, you know, 10 Irish coins." He'd say, "Okay, that's what the bridge costs. Give me your money." And they'd sell them the bridge and say, "Now you can go up there and set up a shop and charge every car that goes across that bridge $10. And the guy go, "Wow, I'll be rich real soon." "Yeah, you're in America now." And so anyway, give the guy the money. And he'd go up and, of course, set up his taxation station, which was didn't last long. Nobody's going to pay this guy some money. But anyway, you know, that's the expression. If you believe NASA's going to the moon, then I got a bridge to sell you, buddy. But they keep selling this. I don't know. They just keep selling this ridiculous story. But the whole point is, not only can NASA not go to the moon, but they're peddling this 1960s, 1950s technology of a big rocket going to the moon. Oh, my goodness. La, la, land. But this, how do these people do this with a straight face? And politicians voting for it? Oh, my goodness. With your money, buddy. You know, hundreds of billions of dollars going into this nonsense. Okay, so anyway, now, getting back to the real topic, how do you move around in outer space? Now, I was giving the example of the old square rig sailing ships following the wind patterns that go westerly, the trade there. That's why they're called the trade winds. They were used for trade. They would sail south, and interestingly enough, Columbus knew this. Columbus knew that that's what he did when he first came to the Americas. He sailed south along the coast of Africa till they came to the latitude where there were trade winds, and sailed across to the Americas. And then when they returned to Spain, they sailed north until they caught the eastwardly moving trade winds going back to Spain. Okay, so anyway, how does this relate to the electric highways to the stars? You have the exact same situation. In the solar system, there are electric currents. Every planet has an electric current associated with it. I just talked to you about the Jupiter winds. And once again, you're not going to hear this on the NOAA Weather Channel. You're not going to hear this on the World Underground or under whatever, Weather Underground, whatever it is. You're not going to hear any of this, certainly not on the evening news, because, you know, all those people have been trained to be stupid. But the electric rivers to the stars are simply electric currents and electrical currents. That's what they are. And what happens to an electrical current? It generates a magnetic field. And if you generate a magnetic field and you can work against the existing magnetic fields. Now, here's another part of this entire concept. And that is, with the square rig sailboats, they moved at the speed of the wind, a little bit slower. And so they would basically put as much square sail as they could, and they'd move with the wind. And so now the propulsion systems that I developed also do the same thing with electrical currents. They move along the electrical currents. Now, the solar system has electrical currents. Every planet has one. So that means that if you're moving out to a planet, you would get into their electrical current, and then you could move out to the planet. There are things like the August return current sheet, or also electrical currents associated with comets. Those are within the solar system. Outside of the solar system, the galactic wind, it is the same as the solar wind, except on a galactic scale. And what happens is, just like the planets discharge the solar capacitor, the star systems discharge the galactic capacitor. And so, by the way, that's what causes the redshift of the galaxies and quasars, etc., is the light moving out of that non-uniform electric field, the induced electric dipole redshift. You can read about that in my work also. Causes the redshift. But anyway, that is more just more indication that the galaxies have a capacitor, and that, of course, when the galactic arms are a pathway for the electrical return current sheet, so they don't have like the situation in our solar system where it's open space that the return current sheet is moving through, then you have the pathway down the galactic arm. So the electrical current sheets are moving down the electrical arms. I also talk about this in my DVD number 4. It's a hard, real DVD, not downloadable. It's a hard DVD. I talk about this in that DVD also. And so basically you have the electrical currents that move between the stars. Adjacent stars. And so if you want to ride down the electrical currents to the stars, or the electric highways to the stars, the interesting thing also is that any object tends to concentrate when it begins to discharge that capacitor, and that's part of the process. Then the currents become concentrated on that object, just like a comet. So, like I say, these are all things that are in place. It's part of the physics of how the electric universe works, a term I coined back in the, when I started my work, coined that term, and of course, thoroughly borrowed by people out there, internet clowns. But the entire network of electrical currents in the solar system and the galaxy are designed for us to use for travel, just like the trade winds. Okay, so this is, I suggest that you read my book, The Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather. Sounds like a rather complicated title, but it's written for the general public. In there also, I talk about the 17 local electrical batteries that are around planet Earth. So you can move around low Earth orbit and near Earth orbits with electrical currents. So that's something. And of course, there again, nobody in the public space agencies ever talks about this because they simply don't know about it. The people you see at NASA, the Bill Nelsons or anybody public you see at NASA, are tier two scientists. They're people that work in a bubble. Unbeknownst to them is an entire layer of science above them that they have nothing to do with. They don't have any knowledge of it at all. Okay, so let me get more specific about something called specific impulse. Specific impulse is a physics term. It's measured in units of time, which is very interesting. But anyway, it has to deal with the effectiveness, that's a term you might use loosely here, the effectiveness of a propulsion system to move a load in outer space, or a payload, or a rocket, or whatever you have. So the question is, whenever you have a propulsion system, you have to carry fuel along with you traditionally, and that's the beauty of the electrical propulsion systems, is you don't carry fuel along with you because you're pushing against magnetic fields. It's kind of like the old square rig sailing ships also. You didn't have to carry wind with you. You didn't have to carry fuel. You just provided the sails. They stood up in the wind, and the wind blew you along. You did not carry fuel for propulsion in a square rigged sail ship. The same is true with the electric highways to the stars, is you don't carry fuel because you're not using inertial propulsion systems. An inertial propulsion system is one that carries fuel and also a heating agent so that you can heat up some material, spit it out the back of a nozzle, and you move in the other direction. That is an inertial propulsion system. And, of course, is essentially discovered by Isaac Newton. So the idea that if you move something, if you push something in one direction, you will go in the other direction. And you could use an example like this. You're in outer space, you're holding a basketball, and you throw that basketball, the basketball goes one way, and you're going to go the other way. It's an inertial propulsion system, and so with a rocket type of propulsion system, you're heating up some material, sending it out of a nozzle, and that nozzle directs the heated fuel in one direction, and you move in the other direction. But you have to carry all this fuel along. Fuel weighs, it has weight to it, and therefore part of your payload, you have a much smaller payload because of the fact that you have to carry fuel along. Fuel becomes part of your payload. And therefore, that I've talked about this before, the rocket problem, that if you have a rocket that works very well, but you just want to add 1 pound of payload, okay, you add your pound of payload, and you add enough fuel to, you think, okay, well, we'll just add some fuel to get that extra pound into space. But now you've added fuel to the rocket, so now you got to have to add more fuel to get the extra fuel into space. So adding a pound is not a pound. You might be adding 20 pounds of payload because of the extra fuel when you add 1 pound. So this is called the rocket problem, and once you get to really big rockets, adding a pound adds so much weight, and then you have to add the infrastructure to put that pound, so you're expanding the infrastructure of the rocket. Then you need a much stronger shell of the rocket, so your rocket shell becomes much stronger. And this is the thing. Let me just give you an example. Little rockets work very well. Small rockets that might be made out of a tube, for example, and there's really no internal infrastructure required. But you start getting into big, like the type Elon Musk is using or something like that, or Saturn V's or Atlas rockets, all of a sudden the infrastructure and the tubing and all of the things you have to do. I was once at one of the rocket works out in Colorado Springs. I was giving a talk. In fact, it was at the 19th International Electric Propulsion Conference. It's a closed military meeting. And I was giving a talk, and we went out as a field trip to one of the rocket construction sites. It was a big warehouse, and they were putting together basically intercontinental ballistic missiles. And they had a giant aluminum tube that had been cast, and what they were doing is machining out parts of it to make it much lighter. And so it would still have a lot of strength, but reduce the weight. And so that was the process we're one of the processes we were looking at. We also saw high gravity acceleration towers, etc. But anyway, the point is that once you get up to very large rockets, the construction becomes extremely difficult. Whereas with a small rocket, you can use a small, even metal tube or carbon fiber tube, and the tube itself has the strength. But you start making tubes really big, and the walls no longer have a lot of strength. Yeah, you may not know this. Let's talk about a jet airliner and the walls on a jet airliner. You have a framework and then the skin of the airline. When you walk in that door getting into the jet, you can see the thickness of the aluminum casing, the skin of the aircraft, and it's relative to the aircraft, it's not very thick. It's about the equivalent of a aluminum pop can, the thickness of the metal relative to the size of the pop can. And so what the where the strength for the airliner comes from actually is when they inflate it, they actually inflate it, they pressurize it, and that's what gives the airliner its strength as it's going through the air at 600 miles an hour. Okay, well, I'm going to continue this discussion next week, talking about space travel and what it takes, and I will be also talking about specific impulse. And I'll just try and get it in here quickly. If you have a rocket, you burn up the fuel in maybe, say, a 10-minute burn to get something into orbit. So you're burning up this tremendous, tremendous amount of fuel very quickly. There's another type of philosophy, and that is you provide a very small force continuously. So that you could, and I've given examples like this before, that you could have a spacecraft with a, say, a one-pound thruster on it, and working over the course of 2 months continuously gives you the same specific impulse as a large rocket with chemical fuel burning up in a matter of 10 minutes. And so that's the philosophy also of the electric highways to the stars. It's the same philosophy as the square rig sailboats, where you, and also you, the point is you don't have to carry fuel. Anyway, this is something, these are designs I came up with, like I say, back in my Cornell days and working with these in the early 1980s. I realized all of this, and of course, you still have NASA trying to build moon rockets. Totally absurd. Anyway, remember the webpage, sale ends Sunday night, midnight, this coming Sunday night, the 29th of August. Coupon code JMCC for an additional 10% off. There's already a 10% discount on most of the items on the sale page, jmccwaterfilters.com. And the coupon code JMCC for an extra 10% off. And get that MR5 water filter in your house. Become protected, both your hot and cold water for showers, for drinking, in the bathroom, laundry, everything. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.